You guys love Rig Rundowns. We love Rig Rundowns. Love them. Please like and subscribe so we can keep doing these Rig Rundowns.
Thank you. It means a lot.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out at downtown Nashville at the Bridgestone Arena with Lee from Bring Me the Horizon. Lee, how you doing?
Good, mate. Yeah. Really
Thank good. You for doing this. And went off in the wings, he's going to help us out, is Joey's tech. Joey, how you doing?
I'm good. Hey,
how long have you been part of the Bring Me Horizon?
It'll be 11 years this year. Yeah, in August.
Nice.
Yeah, nice while.
Well, you're a valued team member, and I'm sure we'll get into the weeds about some gear stuff. But Lee, I want to talk to you about kind of revisiting the first record. You guys are kind of, you know, it's all the fame and all the rage to do a, what do you like a... when people do remaster.
Yeah.
But you guys aren't remastering, you're re-recording the first record, Count Your Blessings. So can you tell me about what it's been like revisiting that material? I know that you still play it from time to time, but going from start to finish, checking out old songs, but creating them in a new way, and what that process has been like.
It's been good. I mean, it's been hard to relearn it all, basically, because there's no like sense to any of it. It's all, because we were just young, just playing whatever we thought sounded cool, so it's like not in keys or anything like that. So it's like to relearn it, it's just random, as it's proper random. So trying to figure out what I was playing back then and stuff's been hard, but like fun to relearn all that stuff again. But we've not actually changed any of the songs or anything. The songs are the same.
Okay.
It's just we didn't want to remaster, because when we recorded, we weren't even playing it well. So it was like, if we remastered it, it'd still sound a bit shit. So
yeah, the performance is shit.
Yeah. Because we were like, it's the first album we ever did. We had no idea what we were doing. The producer didn't care. So he would just like, we would just like play it and he'd be like, yeah, cool. And like my amp, when we recorded it, it's like a block letter 5150, and there was like a valve going in it. So I kept having to like hit it to make it come back on and stuff. And that's on the record. So it sounds like, it sounded shit anyway. But like, yeah, so... the idea was we wanted to redo it, but just like freshen it up and play everything right and make it sound solid.
Yeah.
And then with like better production and stuff like that. So yeah.
Have you been using, because obviously you guys put out so many records since then, but how have you approached that old material with a new, like your current sound? Are you using any particular amps on the record or re-recording, or are you using the quad cortex, or what were you using?
I used a Buster Alt. I used his plugin, and then he ended up mixing it anyway.
Yeah.
So it worked, because it's like super gainy and chuggy, do you know what I mean, sounding, whereas it's a lot of different sound to what I use live, pretty much, but it works for that CD. It'd be weird trying to like put a Marshall or something into that. I think you just need way more gain and saturation and for all the palm mute stuff to like ring and stuff like that. So yeah, and then I used a Jackson with like EMGs in and stuff, because that's what I used EMGs when we first did it. So yeah, just kind of like a modern approach at like what we used to use.
You kind of, a more modern approach, but you're still knowing what you had to use back then. So you're trying to do it. What was your experience working with Buster?
Oh, sick. Yeah. He's really easy to work with. Like we did, to like finish a couple of mixes, we just went like on a Discord chat kind of thing with him. I've never done it before. And then we could hear everything he was mixing, and then we just like tweaked stuff through that and just went backwards and forwards a couple of times on like the mixes, because I think almost at first it was too modern sounding, and we still wanted it to sound of that time.
Yeah.
So we had to like change a couple of things just to make it sound a little bit more old school, because I think it just works for that, that album.
Because Buster's known for having such a polished, modern, precise, tight sound. So I imagine he almost had to not relearn what you guys were trying to achieve back then, but almost get out of his own way, because he's so good at what he does, and it sounds like you guys didn't want necessarily his 100% touch on
we almost had to make the drum sound worse and stuff, you know, because they sounded so huge at first. It was like, because the drums are so busy in there, it was like they were just sounded huge, and we're like, you almost have to like make it sound a bit shit. You know what I mean, to like to fit in. But it doesn't sound shit at all, like obviously it sounds great, but and then we wanted loads of clarity, like out of the guitars and stuff, not as scooped as you'd imagine and stuff like that, because there's a lot going on. You could just never really hear it because of how it was recording and stuff. So yeah, we spent like some time trying to get them right tonally and stuff, but it sounds sick. Like it actually makes the song seem better because it's like played correctly, and I got to like redo some parts properly and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, it came out really well.
What was the impetus for doing the project, or, you know, where, was it you and Ollie had this idea for all along, or how did it come to be?
Just because it was coming up to like the 20 years anniversary, and they were like obviously like the label and management were on about, oh, do you want to do like a remaster or something like that, and then we got into like thinking, oh, remix would be better, but then we didn't even think we had any stems, like, but we found out we did, but then when you listen to the stems, they sound terrible, so it's like, you couldn't really, there were no DIs or anything like that, so then we just went, well, we might as well re-record all the bits and just make it sound good. Yes.
All right. Well, before we get into the signature gear, obviously you got your Jackson here, is that I wanted to touch on, because you said that first record was so heavy and so much gain, but through the progression of your sound and the band sound, you've really, less gain is kind of more, but it's still the heaviness. And I was curious if when Jordan joined the band, if that was like an influence on what he was doing and the sound building that he was doing that, you know, influenced not only the band, but also the way you approach tone.
I'd switched to Marshalls before that.
Okay.
I started with like 5150s and stuff like that. Then I went to Orange, and for a while I was running like a 5150 and an Orange, and then just Oranges. And then I think we played like South America and they didn't have any Orange, so they just gave me a Marshall and it sounded insane. And I was like, why have I not used this forever? But yeah, I was always on that, like, I guess because when we were younger, we didn't have like a bunch of money or anything. So I only played heads that like I could afford or got given, or like sponsorships and stuff. So with like Marshall and that, when I was younger, I could never afford one. So when I eventually heard it just by playing it, that's when I like, oh, it could sound this good if I use this amp. So it was just like a natural progression for me. But like, I still love like 5150s and stuff like that. But there's something about like a Marshall, like mid-range, like aggressiveness that I love in the sound now. And like the sound now, even in the Cortex, is based on like a modded Marshall.
Okay.
It's still like super, a lot of mids in there and stuff. Less game, but like, I feel like the attack and aggression comes from the, it's like quite harsh sounding, but I feel like that's like, it's almost like fake distortion, do you know what I mean? But like, yeah.
Well, it's also the way you attack the instrument, and we'll get to here in a little bit, is you got the high, the heavy E string.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the combination of that can really overdrive.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
A mid overdriven amp, like an 800. Now let's get into the Jackson. I want to know, you've played all sorts of guitars.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
you started playing Jackson, maybe one of the first guitars you had was a Jackson, maybe?
Yeah, like my, I'd say it was like my second proper guitar, and it was like a Jackson Warrior.
Yeah.
Which was sick, and at that point, my favourite music was like, I know, like At the Gates, Arch Enemy, Metallica and all this stuff, so the shape and that, it just reminded me of like an Explorer, do you know what I mean? So, and it had EMGs in and stuff, so I loved that guitar. It was sick, and like his first ever European tour, I played it on that and stuff. So it was cool to come like full circle back to him and then end up doing this, really, yeah.
How did you get back into the Jackson family? Was there another guitar that you kind of got into? How did you get going in back with Jackson?
We were going to play a song where I'd recorded like dive bombs, and I didn't have any dive bomb guitar. So I just on eBay bought like a Randy Rhodes Jackson.
It was a Concord.
Oh, Concord, yeah. It weren't even Randy Rhodes, yeah. It weren't even like super, I think it was like £700 or something, and I was like, oh, I need to do dive bomb, so I'll get that one, and using that for a while. And then Tim, he used to play in Architects years ago, like known him forever, like 20 years. He now is there like artist relations for Jackson.
Yeah.
So he just like messaged me and was like, oh, you're using a Jackson live, do you want to use more? I can get you more. So then it started like that, and and then he just started sending us guitars to try. After I played them for a while, then they were like, he was like, oh, I think it'd be cool to talk to you about doing a signature with Jackson and stuff. And it just really easy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
How did you land on the Surfcaster? Because like I was telling Joey beforehand, the only person that I could really associate before your signature came out was Mike. And I don't know who started it first, Mike from Spiritbox. He was using the Surfcaster before he went to Aristides. How did you land on the Surfcaster body?
Because I didn't just want to do like a different colour and a shape, they've done a lot, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought like I'd try and do something that's a bit different to what, when you think of Jackson, you think of like the Randy Rhodes and like Dinky shape and stuff like that. So I was like, I just went through a lot of like old guitars they'd done, and I found it was Charvel Surfcaster, and yeah. I'm like, can we redo this? And instantly they was like, yeah, well, that'd be a cool idea, but like change it to like modernize it all and stuff. And I had no idea Mike were doing one. I think they did it after, didn't they?
I think it was, it's, yeah, because his is like a custom shop. So yeah. Okay. Obviously,
but he's had like the Fender headstock as well, yeah. But yeah, it was just like, I just wanted to do something different, and I just thought it'd look cool, and then they were up for it, so yeah.
We're right on. Joey is telling me is that you were chasing West Borland when you got that Jackson. Was that Joey where you said that?
It was like the ironic look of having a West Borland spiky guitar again,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because that's the first thing you think of when you think of Randy Rhodes and West Borland. I know anyway with Jackson. Yeah. So it was, at the time, we were playing a lot of the Paolettis. So it was like Jazzmaster Shapes, Teddy's, Strats. And we still had a bunch of the old Epiphone signatures as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like a difference to what we had. All of a sudden, we had the metal-looking Floyd Rose sharp guitar. Yeah, and that kind of spurred on the rest of the Jackson thing.
It's like that full circle thing, though, because it's all the guitars I had at first were like metal, like Ibanez, you know, like Shredder guitars and stuff when I was younger. And then I got all into like Les Pauls and all that, which I still love. But then now, like, I'm with Jackson, I love playing the like super extreme over-the-top kind of looking stuff, you know, like the Warrior and that. I just think it's cool because we're not like the heaviest band, but for certain songs it suits it so well because they just play, I feel like, easier, you know, them sort of songs and stuff.
It's definitely the context of the song though.
Yeah.
If you're ripping a cool solo of like whammies and stuff, it's cooler to do it on a V than it is anything.
You know what
I mean? So it's like they're kind of picked towards that.
Tell me a little bit more about the specs on this, like pickups and anything that you kind of requested Jackson to do for you.
So one big thing was I wanted the set neck because any time I use a bolt-on neck, because these were, I think traditionally these were bolt-on, you know, the Surfcaster. Yeah, yeah. Whenever I use a bolt-on, because I use a heavy string, if I hit it too hard, you can hear like the neck move and it were like too much. Like, I don't know why, but with these, it like solved that issue because I guess the set neck's a bit stronger in the joint or whatever. So that was like the first thing I noted to them. And then, it's just like stuff that I found makes life easier. Okay. You know, like the locking tuners, getting to the truss rod, getting to the truss rod easy. Then the fine tuners are so good on stage because, I don't know, do you know, if you over twist, then you have to go back down and back up and stuff, and I just find them a lot easier. So it was like, all that stuff is just like stuff I find practical and like makes life easier for both of us, I guess, with the like locking and that. But yeah, and then like the finish and that, I like the look of like natural wood, so I wanted, that's why I wanted it, like the
it comes off as a black ball guitar, but once we got some lights on it earlier, you could really see the wood grain.
Yeah, that were like, I think they sent us a bunch of samples and we had to find the one that would work right to like make sure you could still see enough grain, because the first prototype I've got thicker, it's like a thicker finish than this and you can barely see the grain through it, but I don't know, this one, I mean the production ones look great, do you know what I mean, like the, you can see through it, and I want them to wear quite fast as well. That were another thing I was saying to Jackson, is because I love relict guitars.
Yeah.
So I want them to like all wear really fast, so they'll all look like different and stuff like that. So I don't know how likely it is, but.
Have you ever thought to have a relict guitar, maybe like version 2 signature?
They did me a prototype that were relict.
Oh, okay.
But you ended up relicking it more, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't relict as much as we'd liked it to be. A couple of little, it's like they did it quite modestly. Because we had two. There was actually, in the lockup, there was a first axe
that
we had from years ago.
Yeah.
It was similar looking, black with the white, so I kind of just got that on one side and just copied all the marks in which it had actually been worn down. Because they were similar looking guitars, it was kind of another full circle moment to be like, you know, that's kind of what we mastered it off.
Yeah. Did you have any specific tools you use? Sandpaper, nails?
Oh, screwdrivers, all sorts. Just dinging it on the floor, took it out to the car park and scratch. Yeah, you do all sorts.
It looks cool.
Chuck anything at it, Relicking's the easiest job in the world. You just batter it.
You can't do it wrong.
You don't have to do anything. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What did you tell them about pickups, what you wanted for the recipe?
So, that's like my own pickup they built me. So I sent the pickup I had in the Epiphones, I really liked. So I basically sent them one of them and they, I guess, looked into it, took it to pieces and stuff. But it is different, like, we changed a few things on it and I feel like this one's slightly more, got that mid-range thing I'm on about, like an aggressive mid-range top, which I really like. But it's like, it's super clear. I hate, like, they sent me one first and it were almost too compressed and you like lost clarity, do you know, when you're strumming stuff. Whereas this one now, it's like you strum a chord, you hear everything, and it's super like clear, yeah, and good. Yeah.
Because you've like you've done so much research on your own. Just you had the EMGs, you had the bare knuckles, you had the Gibson ones that are probably in your Gibson. I know the Epiphone had their own pickup. So it's like you have kind of fine-tuned what you're looking for. So I'm sure when you came to Jackson, you had kind of specifics. But I wanted to know more about how did you land on the P90? P90 became a pickup that you've really kind of favored.
Yeah, because I in that first act that Joey ran about, that was the first guitar where I had an... originally, it was an EMG and a single coil in the neck of that one. And it was the first one I'd done the single coil on, just because I thought it looked cool. And then when playing with clean, like my cleans, it sounded so nice that I just got into like the single coil idea. But then aesthetically, I think when you have the humbucker size P90, it just looks a bit nicer. And I like the tone of a P90 as well, because it's a bit like more rounder and stuff, but you still get all that like top end and that. So it's just... It just sounds nice. It's a sound thing mainly. Yeah. Like,
it's not
really
too
like...
much of a drop off from the humbucker.
Either. Yeah, yeah.
I know you can get ones that are hotter and you know, but it was. There's never ever been an issue with flicking to that and it not having
enough output.
It's always been there.
It just sounds super nice because I like my clean to be like, a lot of the time, super clean. So the P90 works really well for that.
So the P90 is kind of more for the clean stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never really use it. I'd never use it on gain. Like, you know, a lot of people go on neck for like a solo and stuff like that. I've never had need to do that with this, but sometimes we do like these weird tones where it almost sounds like a bass, but it's a guitar and it's like a weird DI. And I always use the P90 for that. Huh. See, it almost get with the 80 gauge, and then like in that on that P90, you get a real like bassy tone. Do you know, like it sounds like a bass guitar? So
it's similar to like, you know, when you get like baritones that have P90, a lot of them come with P90s now, because a baritone super low can just be loads down the bucket. So it's kind of that similar train of thought. If the tone's like a busted bass DI sound, it works for that.
There's like not too much bottom end in a P90 as well. So you keep like clarity and stuff again.
But the tones are drastic. They're not like you're just sitting there noodling. They're like song specific power tones. Yeah. They're quite intense, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it works for that.
Yeah.
You know? Tell me how, I mean, you've been doing it for years and years, but how did you get to the point when you're putting an 80 on the top E?
That was we toured America in, I think it was 2008, and we're on tour with Bury Your Dead, and they had just thick strings, and in England at that time, I think like the thickest you could get were like a 58, well, what I could find anyway. And then we got to America and like went to Guitar Center, and I think it was Zach Wildsets had like a 60 something or a 70, and I started using them. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is way better, and you know, like it weren't like sagging all over and stuff. And then just kept progressing, and then
kept going up,
until I could, because I play, my right hand is really like, I play hard, so if it's not that thick, it wobbles all over, and I find it harder to play on thin strings because it's like I dig in hard, it can almost like, if they're thin, they move too much, do you know what I mean? So for what I did at that point, like when we were doing like Suicide Season, a lot of the riffs are like single stringy stuff, so it just sounded fat as anything. Originally it was bass string, and we had to like cut the end off and stuff, but then they started making them.
Who are your strings? What are you?
Always been Ernie Ball.
So it's like, is it like a normal slinky set, like a 10 and then an 80?
We get our...
A lot of guys are getting signature string sets. I feel like you should get one with that.
Our 80s
come singular. They started producing them after we were requesting them all the time.
And then, I mean, we can go through them. So it's like the lower tunings is like drop A, C standard. So it's the same, but just the bottom string's changing. They're always going to be an 80 on that bottom string, even in C standard. And then it will literally go to a 44. So we just chuck away the 56. So it's almost half the size.
Yeah.
But again, if you're playing it and you're doing the chords, you know what I mean? And you're always returning to that bottom string. It's just to have it being that much bigger. That's where the tone is. That's how you
It makes sense what we do. It probably like if you're playing, I don't know, like technical metal. Like for the Count Your Blessings re-recording, I didn't use an 80 because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
For like, for what we were doing back then. But for everything from Count Your Blessings, it works great.
Yeah.
And like even modern, all this new stuff, because I've always played this, it's played like that on the CD, it works really well. Yeah, but like if you're playing Count Your Blessings riffs, I went back to, I think, like a 70 or something like that, just to make it playable.
Now, I know that, like, from your dad was a big influence and he got you into, like, you know, Thin Lizzy was a band. I know you're, like, a classic rock guy. So when you go home and pick up a guitar that isn't playing, you know, Bring Me Stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have 80s? Or is it an adjustment? Like, when you play, like, a, you know, 10 to 46 or whatever you
have. It just feels nice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's like, a little easier.
Yeah. So, like, a lot of my guitars at home are just standard, like, regular Slinky or whatever. So, yeah, I just have, like, that on, and I'm not... I mean, an 80, if it's got an 80 on, it's usually tuned to drop A or something anyway. And when I'm just, like, noodling at home, I'm always just in, like, E or whatever. So I'll just pick up one of them. But, like, when we're writing for the band or anything like that, it's all... This is, like, my go-to setup.
Got
and
it.
Then go from there. If I need to go up in tunings, we just bring the... that thickness down, don't we, sometimes? So, like, if I'm in, like, drop C, where we've gone up a gauge or whatever?
Yeah, so like, on, like, the drop Bs, we use this eight-string set.
Wow.
And again, it's always this set, and we're just playing around with it. So if it's drop B, it'll be, like, a 74 on the bottom to a 42. But then if it's, like, E-flat, we might do a 54 or a 64. Yeah. But having these sets just enables us to change them bottom ones throughout the gauges.
What are all the tunings? So we've got covered drop A, drop C, drop B,
we got every
E-flat.
Tuning from drop A all the way to E standard.
Yeah.
So every drop and standard from that in every semitone up to E.
Have you ever tried messing with the quad? We'll get there being in the rig. Because it doesn't have, like, a pitch.
Yeah, we use that.
Yeah.
So, like, some songs, because we wrote them kind of in the studio, the chorus will be like, it'll use like an open string that's not in like another section of the song. You wouldn't use that. So it's got like two tunings within the song. So we use it for that. So like,
okay.
A lot we'll of transposing. Yeah. It's not for this whole song. It'll be like the chorus of this song.
Yeah.
Or the bridge of this song.
So like the chorus will drop. So I need the open to be lower. So we'll just drop it. And then I have to like relearn it in a different place, do you know what I mean? So if I played it all in one tune, it'd sound terrible.
Yeah.
But when it's moving through the MIDI and that, it all works and makes sense. But
plus, I think our mentality with it is like, if we can get a guitar in the correct tuning, we will.
Yeah.
Because
for
us, that's always going to sound better.
Yeah.
No matter what, you know what I mean? No matter how good the transposing is, if we've got space in the vault and we can have the guitar in the right tuning, and again for that reason, because it'll get to the chorus and the tuning will change. So that's when we'll bring it in, when we have to, rather than using it.
I think when we got rid of amps as well, we were like, well, I'm going to bring more guitars then. Because I'm not, well, like, we're not going to, we don't need to ship amps about and heads anymore. So we've got more space.
We went
space
from one to two volts. Yeah.
Well, let's cruise through some more guitars. Songs. Guitars here.
Cool.
I'll just go to the next one.
Yeah.
Oh, so when you guys are gearing up for a tour like this and you're playing a lot of stuff from several albums, are you working out what guitars get used for what? Because like you said, like you know, guitar specific to song specific.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
tuning's always the first thing that dictates.
Okay.
We always go like, what guitar have I got in this tuning? And then if it matches the song, then we'll do it. But if not, then we end up bringing another guitar out or switching stuff about. But like, this one is just a cool guitar.
Yeah.
They sent it to me, but like, it's super nice and that, and I only use it on one song, don't I? But
I
used to use it on more, but they're not in the set at the minute. But it's just a really nice guitar, basically, and it's just there's only that song in that tuning as well, isn't there?
This is the thing with having so many tunings. Majority of the guitars, I think one of them gets used three. The rest is pretty much one song a night because they're all in pretty much every song's in a different tuning.
Got it.
So again, people are always like, oh, you got so many guitars, it must be annoying. It's almost better because I know every song, this guitar's good because I just checked it. And it makes every guitar become specific for that song. It means we can change all the tones specifically for that guitar in that. So like,
because of the different pickups and stuff. We EQ like
each patch, I bet.
Yeah, to the suit of the guitar and stuff. So like every guitar is like made to sound good for that song. So
it's pretty much the start of every tour. Once we know the set list doesn't necessarily change much for our tour. We'll figure out the set list, we'll see what guitars we're using for what songs, and then we'll go in and be like, right, we're using this guitar on this song now, so let's just tweak the patches to suit that guitar. And then the next tour might be a different one, so we'll tweak them again.
Everything
gets tailored for that guitar, that song, that part, if you know what I mean.
What song does this one get used for?
It's Obey, that one, which is actually one of the songs that drops loads. Oh, sorry, no, it's Lost. Yeah, sorry,
Lost, which is like almost like a pop punk song. We don't even suit this, but like, there's a breakdown in it. But it's like, it just plays nice, and we needed another guitar for that tuning. Because we use the what's it called, the pitch thing?
The transpose.
Transpose. Yeah. But I feel like when you move lower and stuff, you lose like this clarity. Because I know it, we were just today changing, there's a patch on one of the songs where the chorus drops. And for that, I brought like a bit more treble just on that little section and a bit more like presence in like the EQ. Because it's, I feel like when you drop on the transpose, you lose like the bite sort of thing. So yeah,
but you feel it. It's a feeling thing.
Yeah, it's a thing like in the moment you're on stage and your feel's off, so you're taking a mental note, or you hear it in the ears during the show, or is it like, do you listen back to the
No, it'd be when I'm playing live, I'll notice, and then usually I've got a mic outside the stage that just talks to Joey, so I'll go up and tell him just like, oh, remember this, and then he'll write it down. Yeah. And then we'll like, next day, Joey will either like sort it before I even get to sound check, or we'll then look at it after sound check and just like, sort stuff out, but it's pretty handy, really, isn't it?
So you guys are always tweaking.
Yeah.
Constantly. But it's not, we're not searching for anything. I know your ears might get tired and one day you just think it might sound a little better with this, but it's like, that was always our thing with the amps as well, because I think that's, you know, when people go to Kempers and Modelers, it's like, oh, well, it stays the same every day. You don't necessarily want the same every day. You might tweak and stuff, and that's with us. I mean, if anything drastic, I let our front of house know that this part of the song's slightly different, but other than that, it's always just tweaking and playing around with it. It's like, why not? That's like why we're here, you know?
Yeah. Now I see the Floyd Rose, but Joey, you said there's a drumstick
blocked.
It's my little on the road hack of blocking off a trim. I found out that a drumstick is like the perfect width to fit behind the block.
Yeah.
So as long as you trim it that way, you can just wedge it in, blocked off trim. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But you still get the fine tuners, so it's quite handy.
Yeah.
But there's not much to say about that.
Cool.
It's just a nice one. We got the Randy Rhodes next.
Yeah.
Again, only used for one song in the set. But
just no Floyd Rose, basically. It's just cool. Yeah, and it's for like a heavy song, and it's a sick guitar. And then I had I think it's a War Pig line about, so we'll just put that in there.
Yeah,
I think it just had a,
it's just the stock Japanese
so again,
what's the song on this one?
Amen.
So it's quite a nasty
like fuzz and stuff in some
with
bits
War
and,
Pig,
and I didn't realize there's so much output in that pickup, so we keep having to lower it a bit, don't we?
We've played around with it a few times this tour, but
what's this Jimmy clip thing up here? I've seen in a couple,
just to stop. So do you know when you're doing like, if you chug and then you stop suddenly, you can sometimes get ring.
Oh, okay. It just stops, so like a mute?
It basically just stops any rattle on a...
We've not done it on that one either, but we do. A cable tie at the bottom there as well. So it's the same as the Jimmy Kip at the top.
I used to just use foam under there, but then, I don't know, just use that and it works great. It just stops any like... So you aren't having to rely on the noise gate as much because you haven't got as much like sounds coming through. Same with like the Floyd Rose on the back. You can just put like foam or whatever in there to stop the
Or a
strings.
Drumstick.
Yeah,
or a drumstick. Or a drumstick, yeah.
What's the next guitar we should see?
It's the Warrior. It's the first and only baritone that we currently have. First proper baritone.
Oh, yeah.
We've done the ones that are like almost the baritone, but this is the first song? One.
So this one's Kool-Aid, but it's in...
Drop A.
Drop
this
A.
is the lowest tune.
I don't think it would drop A on when we recorded it, but live we've lowered it a bit. So this works even better for it because there's even more tension, obviously, because it's... a longer neck, but and it's like it's got like a solo in and stuff, so this guitar is like easy to play, so it just comes in handy. It's a kill switch thing.
Okay,
never use it, but it's just, it just suits the song really well and sounds really good. I don't even know what pickup it is, but
the black inlays, it's shark sick. fins,
but yeah, that's just another like I say, like one of my first ever guitars were one of these, so it's cool to like use one again. Live.
And the thing I appreciate, Lee, about your signature model is that, you know, it's not $4,000 or $5,000. In the US it's a little, it's either like at $1,000 or just a little bit.
I think it's like seven something.
Okay, even
eight,
better.
That was one thing when we were making them, that you want people to be able to afford them, do you know what I mean? And also I was always like, I'm up for it as long as it's a good guitar. And then when I got the prototype of the production model and it was still like really good, I was like, that's what I used, you know what I mean? I'm not using like some secret custom shop version or something like that. It's just a production model and I love it. So I mean, it's gone down really well, like they've sold so well, so I'm glad. I think we must have done something right, so yeah.
You're making a cool guitar and you're a big deal, so yeah, I imagine it's a recipe to sell some units.
I feel like they sell to people who aren't just just into our band though as well. Yeah. I think it is a nice different looking guitar. You know?
Joey, we should have brought this up when I had the signature out, but what do you have got to do to keep that 80 kind of working with, whether it's the tuner or the nut?
So we restring a lot.
Okay.
And it's just, you stretch the hell out of it to keep it in tune. But again, because each guitar's only getting played a couple of times a night and then it's restrung again, we don't normally get much falling out or much breaking of anything.
Strings anymore, yeah.
We never really snap strings, because they just get changed before they get to that point, you know what I mean? And because that, they're being maintained every day. But I mean, again, there are some things like, I mean, we haven't had to do it with any of Jackson's, but a lot of the old Epiphones, we used to have to change tuning pegs after a while because they just seize up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's on any guitar of that level. Of
and
that
then any filing point, of the know. Nut to make it wider?
I mean, we make it slightly wider, yeah. A lot of the things is also the hole in the tuner peg. You used to have to, like, get a little rat tail file and make them wider and stuff. Yeah. But again, it's one of the things where, like, it might not be the best thing for people to do at home, because I might do it and break it, but then fortunately we can just replace it. You know what I mean? And it's like, if we go out one night and the 80 doesn't quite hold or anything, I'll just replace the nut the next day. It's not that big of an issue, you know.
Yeah.
But majority of time, again, that for us, they're tools and they just work every day. You know, we don't have to worry about them. They're just solid, you know.
Well, I interrupt you with that question. If you want to go ahead and grab that guitar,
we've got a couple of Fenders out with us as well. Obviously, working with Jackson, they're all the same. They're like under the same roof now, so we're able to have a couple of Fenders out with us.
But yeah, this is just, we were at the Fender office, weren't we?
In London, yeah, the showroom. Yeah.
And we saw this, and I was like, looks sick. But I played on the Follow You, which is, it's all like clean and well, it has got some gain and stuff, but the, again, I just play it in like the middle and you've got these like mini humbuckers and they just sound like really nice on clean, don't they?
First got that guitar, we were playing it on Can You Feel My Heart, because it has a bit of a Les Paul but without that telly honk, do you know what I mean?
Not,
it's got more of a body to it. It's a lovely sounding guitar.
It's just really nice. Again, it suits that song really well, the sound of the pickups, which is mainly what I go off when I'm like picking it. But yeah, because if you had like EMGs or whatever for a super clean song, it kind of don't work, but unless you're Metallica. But it just sounds sick. And it looks cool as well, you know what I mean? It's a nice guitar, but yeah. And it plays well for that song.
I knew there was going to be a lot of guitars, but I didn't have Telecaster, my bingo card.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, we got a Strat now as well, yeah.
But the first act I had was like a Telecaster shape and stuff. So like that were like the first ever custom guitar someone built for me and stuff. So I still love Telecasters, to be fair, but yeah. And then this is just for, use it on Drown, don't I?
Yes, yeah.
Again, it's just a nice guitar, but it sounds, because that song's in like, I think it's in like E flat, innit? So it just sounds good, and it's a little like the pickups, not as like bitey and harsh, so when I'm tuned up that high, I'm still running the same kind of amps, but because the pickups like less output and less top end, it sounds a bit more subtle. Do you know what I mean? Because it's tuned higher. Sometimes, because if you use a tuned higher guitar with the same pickup, it sounds harsher because I haven't got the like heavier strings on there and stuff. Whereas this one doesn't, because it's got them pickups in. But yeah, it sounds really nice. It's got like the noiseless single coils, so when I do clean it,
perfect
silent. But yeah, it's just another really good guitar. Plays really good.
We felt we could never get rid of the Strat. I think it was medicine. You started playing medicine. That was the first time we started using a Strat. But even then, it was like, can we use a Strat? Like, yeah, sure. And then we've always kept one.
Yeah.
Because it's such a specific sound, it's always been good to have one in the vault to then use, you know what I mean? Yeah. At the moment, Drown's the song that it works on.
Yeah.
So it's like, at some point it might change. But
when you approach a new instrument or bring it into the band, whether it's a sound or a appearance thing, are you ever worried about, like, can I do this in this band? Or is it kind of like, no rules? You just do it?
I don't think anyone really cares like for me, unless I were using something ridiculous, but like it's usually just what I want it to sound like. I usually try and pick the tool for the job, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
this will be the last one.
Oh yeah, I got this just before tour from a gear exchange Facebook thing, but I've got a Marauder at home, and I've always wanted to mod it to this exact specification, and someone was selling it modded already, so
really?
I was like, I think I got it for like £700 in it, which is good for a Marauder.
Did you go pick it up or did you send Joey?
No, we both went.
Because I'd be like, shit my pants if like all of a sudden Lee messaged me and like, yeah, I like you're a Marauder.
Yeah. But he was only a young kid, wasn't he? Called like Harry or something.
He's in a Beatles tribute band. So
yeah.
He was playing Beatles.
Oh, he's in a Beatles tribute band?
Yeah. But it's awesome. Just
yeah, I think George Harrison used one of these.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always wanted to do it to my Marauder, but because it were original, I always like, I don't want to like ruin the original value of it.
Yeah.
So then I found this one for a good price, in black as well. And I just got it before it's torn. It sounds sick. It's got like a Gibson burst booker, I think, in it as well. So, and the knob goes to 11.
Of course it does.
So whoever modded that, yeah. But yeah, it's sick, and I love it, to be fair.
I think it's one of them guitars where initially you're like, it's a bit like the frets are worn down, they're super low, and it's a bit janky.
Maple fretboard, which is kind of weird from Gibson.
But then as soon as we plugged it in, we were like, that sounds great. And that's played on Can You For My Art, which is like big open chords, it just sings, and there's some nice like lead parts in it. A couple of neck bends, you know, it sounds great.
And because it's got the bolt on and it's tuned high, I don't have the issue of the wobble. And I also use the fact that it's a bolt on because like I said, you know, when you bend the neck on like a ring out and it sounds
But it's
good.
Not chugging. Again, everything's context. It's nice open chords, so for that it sounds sick. Great.
And you can't really go wrong because it's just got one knob. And
it goes to 11.
Yeah, and it goes to 11, so it's louder.
Bringing the Gibson out, I'm curious, like what was your appeal to, like, you had the RDs and obviously you had the signature of the Epiphone. But like, what drew you to those kind of oddball Gibsons, or the Artisan, the Paul?
Yeah. I love all them weirder ones. You know what I mean? Cause like these and the S1 and stuff like that. I've got at home the Victory, which they've just redone.
Yeah.
And then they recently did a new version of the Marauder as well, and I bought one of them as well. But I don't want to like use it on talk. It's like a limited edition or something. But yeah, like this, because I got it for such a good price. I'm like, I can bring it on tour, and if it gets a bit banged up, it don't bother me, do you know what I mean? But yeah, but I don't know, I love, the same with Jackson, I tried to look for like the oddest Jackson I could find, unless it looks like stupid, do you know what I mean? But like, I just like I guess it's not rare, it's just more like...
Unique.
Unique, and like, you can't, I feel like you find like cult followings of them kind of guitars, you know, from that era and stuff, so yeah. Especially with like the RD.
Yeah.
And we're like such a...
It's that reaction. You like when you saw the Marauder, you were like, oh cool, there's a Marauder. It's like, everyone's seen Les Pauls for years. So when you got something a bit different, it stands out, you know?
Yeah, but sick. Well, anything like that.
Tell me about the process of, because I think the last time that we did the rig rundown with you, you were still running the Marshalls. So tell me about kind of how you kept the legacy of the Marshalls and tube amps, and now you're using the Quad Cortex. And I know you and Joey can work through this about the process of kind of going from amps, tubes, tube amps to the digital stuff, and then also how you're EQing things too inside the unit.
For sure.
They used to be here, they'd be a cab under the stage mic'd up, like, and a Marshall running through it at like ridiculous volume, weren't they? So like, everyone hated it, apart from us, because it was just like blasting, or it'd be like in a back room, and then we'd have to run speaker cables to hear, and it'd be in a room, and then when we're playing, everyone backstage can't hear because it's just like a cab full volume. So like, we had a rehearsal and there was someone doing like a production in the rafters, and you weren't allowed to make any sound. So the drum kit was in like a different part of the building into our in-ears, and then I wouldn't allow my amp in the room. So we quickly just captured, we just put like a mic on it, didn't we?
It was a bit of a crisis moment, really. Yeah. It was like, we'd had time in the studio. We just built a whole new rig, amps, switching. Mm. We started using a crank. We were bringing in third amps and things. And then we were in this production rehearsal and things hadn't quite gone to plan. And they were trying to change the production whilst the band still wanted to rehearse. And obviously when you've got Pete Riggers in the air, you have to have silence. You can't have loud, cabs blaring. Mm. So everyone was kind of like, band needs to stop if you can't play without cabs. And it was like, right, give me 10 minutes, I'll just bodge, because we'd been given one, we'd played around with it, but we were like, oh, this is cool, but we don't need it, so whatever. You know, it was just another like new thing that we were looking at. But luckily a couple of days before, I'd captured our favorite 800, our favorite, even the favorite like SM57 that we had. I just, because to make captures on it is so easy, you just do it in a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. So I kind of bodged it, and I remember I had a rack that had had a load of pedals in, and then a rack that had the amps, and I just came out of all the pedals dirty and a clean, just made a quick dirty line, quick clean line, just bodged it together just to get the band through the rehearsal. And we got about halfway through, and I think Lee looked at me and was like, this sounds great, we can use this for the tour. And I remember at the time I was like, I've already just looked at this thing, I don't want to use it, I've been prepared all, you know what I mean, like we had this in a whole new rig, and it was like we had to get a spare sent out so that we weren't doing the tour on one. But then we ended up using it for that tour, and then it just gave us clarity. And then it sounds silly, but like when the possibilities of every part of every song can now be specifically changed.
Yeah, tweaked,
and we're not just, before the mentality was always like, this is the dirty sound for the whole set.
Yeah.
This is the clean sound of the whole set. And the only thing we changed was like delays or bringing in a pog or a chorus or things like that. Where now it was like, right, we can get into like album-specific tones for each individual part and change things and EQ things. And
what timeline was that? Like, was that before or after COVID? Like,
it was just that. We were the first arena tour in the UK after COVID. So it was, I think we were like one of the, not to be like, we were the first, but I think we were the first touring bands to properly have quad cortexes out on the road in arenas, you know. But it was, I was nervous because I'd never just been given this thing like, oh, this is the new thing, this is going to work. And it worked great, and we've been on them ever since.
It solved so much stuff though, because we used to always have issues with, like, do you know, like the mic not being exactly where it plays, because I've heard the tones that much directly into my ears that I'd know if it was like a centimeter off, and then I'd be like, oh, the mic's not in the right place, and then Joy's trying to like find it while I'm playing, or
with a torch, and I'm just there being like, oh, it's a millimeter off, but it's like
they were just like, you know, the variations all the time, do you know what I mean? And another thing we found whenever we came to America, my Marshall sounded like 80% compared to in England. Oh. And then you like researched it was, is it the Hertz or something?
Well, this is what we were talking about earlier. We're actually watching a Premier Guitar video.
Oh, yeah.
We started learning about the Kikazooie power conditioner thing. You know, AC/DC from AC/DC, had it.
Yeah.
And then I did a few gigs with Foo Fighters and all their techs had them. So I started talking to them. I was like, what's this thing? Do I need it? And then everyone kept saying, look, if you're a serious band with amps, this is how you need to power them. And then as soon as we got that, it changed the game. It was like, no matter where in the world we were, it would give us the same frequency, the same voltage, same, you know.
I think it's crazy about that. It's like a, it's a power supply for medical equipment.
It's like life support machines and stuff, right? To keep it at a constant. I mean, it was they're very expensive what they are. We were fortunate to have them, but that made them very good. But again, just switching over to these, just all, it's obvious, isn't it? You go to modelers and you get rid of all that stuff, but it worked for us.
For you, Lee, was it a hard sell? Because like up to that point, you were pretty devoted to your 800s, and so then when you're in that crisis moment, we'll call it, and then you're having to kind of go through the, you know, those captures you did luckily a few days before, and then you're hearing it in your in-ears for the first time, you're like,
I couldn't believe. Do you know what my major issue with like Kempers and stuff was? Always that it felt different. It weren't even the sound, to me it didn't sound as good, but like it felt different to play, and it didn't feel like you were playing a real amp. But then we switched to the, well, we tried that rehearsal, and I was like, this feels the exact same. I can't believe how it reacts exactly as an amp would react.
We probably did about 3 years of touring where it was just a clean amp and a dirty amp. We didn't do any switching, nothing else. Yeah. It was a full rack full of pedals. We had all the Strymons doing all the delays and reverbs. We had like a load of different drive pedals, fuzz pedals. We had everything, and we were literally just using it as like a clean amp and a dirty amp. No switching, no nothing. Like, so it all came organically. Like, we weren't, there was never like a limit. A lot of bands, you know, if you're flying with gear, that's, you need it. You can't freight amps everywhere. So, but for us, we were fortunate. We never had that issue. So it never solved anything for us other than people just telling us we needed to use it. So we were always against it, because we were just like, we don't need it. We got our amps, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the fact that it came up like organically and almost by accident, it was like a slow, gradual switch over. It wasn't just like, right, let's get rid of all the analog stuff. It was like slowly, bit by bit, as a pedal would. We had a lot of like boutique fuzzes and stuff. If one broke, it was like, right, let's just get that captured, so we've got it forever. And then over time, it just, at the time, Lee had a studio, and we just started like remaking all the tones and things, and it just became more versatile, really. And it just became easier.
It's handy, like when we add new songs in now, like I could be at home and I literally sit in my studio and make all my tones and then just send them to Joey, and then at rehearsals he's just got it all and it's set up. And I can do like JJ, who plays live guitar for us, like I can make all his tones, just send them to them, and then they've got his tones ready and stuff like that. He doesn't have to like worry about what it sounds like and stuff. So it's just future stuff.
I mean, like, we're living in the future.
It's just like you can do crazy shit.
How are you powering it? Because, you know, sometimes people use the power stage from Duncan, you know.
We just use the regular power supplies. We're not, nothing's, but I mean, everything's power conditioned and looked after, everything's taped down.
It's never broke, has it? So
No, like, touch wood. They've always
no
been
point, yeah.
they've always
and
been
then
no
what about, and stuff. Like, so no cabs on stage?
No, nothing.
Just in ear monitors in the front of house?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
That's another thing as well. Like, the cab, we have like not a clean stage because there's all this going on, but like there was nowhere to have a cab anyway, so it's almost
just, we were using them as like side fills for the longest time,
And then
they were off stage. And then when I first started with this band, we were in like theatres and things, so it literally being like the office with the tour manager doing emails and the cab's there, and it's just like everyone
and
hated
sound
it.
Guys
it
always
sounded
hate
great.
It as well, don't they, like always complain that they can't control it and stuff. So we were always in like a constant battle of them wanting to turn it down and shit, and it's like now it's just, yeah, it's all in
All in the box.
Yeah. So, speaking in the box, so 800s, I imagine. Are there any other amps that you're using?
I mean, it's a bunch because it's like every single part, every single section of every single song we've gone in depth now, and everything's catered for that part. If you know.
And we've all his albums sound quite, you know, like drastically different. So there's like low. There's 800s. Then there's like a 14 modded capture. Oh,
okay. The like, thing. Yeah.
So there's that.
Crank,
and there's a crank one. Yeah. Then remember the crank.
Oh yeah, crank is dime. Yeah, dime.
So, first time we ever came to America on tour, we got one then because we played one. And I remember, to be fair, I didn't use it for about 10 years, and then we just had it in rehearsal room, and Joy were there, and I'm like, I can't remember what this sounds like. I plugged it in, it sounded really good.
It's funny enough, it's when you got the Concorde.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like, right, let's plug the V into
a crank.
And it just sounded great. It sounded like the best 800 you've ever heard.
You might be the last guy that's plugged into a crank.
I know. It's a sick amp, though. If you set it right, you can, because it's got like the contour on, so you can go drastic.
And yeah.
It can sound terrible, but if you set it up like right, it's, to me, it sounds like a modded Marshall. It's just like Marshally, but ballsier, do you know what I mean? And like more gain. But yeah, so there's like captures of that in there, and then captures are all my pedals and stuff, just like, so I don't have to bring them fuzzers and
you kind of did the whole collection, so it's kind of got, and you capture them all at different points, so it's like a lot of drive pedals that we use is like gain on zero, level on 10, you know, it's like little boosts and stuff, but we'll have like a couple of captures of clones where it's like the gain there, the gain, and then, you know, so we've got a couple of different flavors that we'll then we can then choose when we're then making new tones and things as well.
Now I do see a couple of devices peeking out. Are those like outboard gear? Is it like a whammy?
So, yeah. So the whammy's in line. Originally, when we had all the amps set up, so the rig is still set up. Everything harks back to the old amp setup. So it's new rig now, but everything's like stuff that we use there. All the mentality and beliefs is based off of that. So the whammy was there. That's how we used to do our transposing. So we used to use the MIDI on the whammy before we had the Cortexes.
Because that whammy were the only one with MIDI on, so you could.
Yeah.
So it could get sent, you know, the signal to like change pitch. And
so because we used to use the drop pedals that obviously everyone used to use.
Yep.
And then to be able to use with MIDI, that's what you use the whammy for. But I've kind of kept it in the rig now as a failsafe because we don't really carry spares of guitars. So like my drop A sharp, for instance, I've only got that one in A sharp. So if I need to give him the B, I can use that as just a master drop without having to go into the settings of the quad Cortex. Because like I said, the chorus might be down too. So if I just go in there and go the transpose and one, by the time it gets to the chorus, it might be wrong again.
Yeah.
So that's just a physical button I can just click. I've never had to use it, but it's just, it's more if I need to swap to a guitar. Okay. It doesn't get touched, really.
And there's an, I see a white pedal there.
The other one's the Cathedral.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just the reverse reverb sound that I think Lee's kind of known for using a lot of the time. We haven't been able to recreate that with anything other than that pedal.
What do you like about that?
It just, do you know what, I use it for, do you know when I've used an Ebo on like, in the studio and stuff? There's a setting on there that you can basically, you can't really hear the pick, so you just get a good Ebo effect.
Like no attack.
Yeah, and it's just like swells kind of, and
it just sounds like
it's
a string.
Just that. Yeah, it sounds like strings almost. It's just that's all I've ever used it for mainly, and I've not found a pedal be able to do that as good. So yeah, it's just always been.
And
I use it still loads on all the songs, but it's great. Yeah.
There's also a Synth 9 in there.
Okay.
Oh, which is just for one specific song. We've not played it in years, but in case we do, it's in there.
Just like a synth section. Well, it sounds like a synth, but it's me playing.
Now, how are you, everything getting changed? Are Joey, are you making the switches? Are you making, because I see double duplicate boards here.
So we use the RJM Masterminds. We have one out on stage, and then I've got one here that just copies it. The way that we do it, so the MIDI comes from the backing tracks, which triggers all the presets in there, which then controls the Cortex.
Okay.
Just so that, you know, if we ever have MIDI go down, we've still got something physical that we can come and look at and know where we are and stuff like that. But again, it Lee's not there hitting it. It goes at the side of stage. It's just there, you know, when you come over, you make sure you're on the right song, tune your guitar. It's just like a...
It's like a backup.
We don't really use it.
If something goes down, we can just move that to the stage and then I can trigger everything still. So it's like, it's more just like a... What's the word? Like a control, you just want to see where you are.
Yeah, like a roadmap.
The Cortex is in the rack. It's just nice to look down and, you know, begin the song. I know we're ready to go.
They're based on songs. So like right here, you got Mantra up, and then like each one, you got those patches already dialed in for that specific song. Okay.
Exactly. And then it also helps in like rehearsals, like when we're doing a new song. we haven't put the MIDI in yet. Yeah. It's like Lee can just have the board, play through the song a bunch, just keep playing, and then later on we can sort the MIDI out. It's just handy to have something physical as opposed to always going back to the rack and having to do something. But again, it's from the old rig, so it's just kept from there. I'm at about 500 presets on there now over the 10 years, so it's like to get rid of that and go all in.
The song menu is pages and of all the different things.
I mean, every song that we've ever played since. Yeah. I mean, we brought this in probably 2017, I think we switched over to these.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before, we used to use the G2, which were great because we had the pedals on the floor, but then when we went to the rack, that's when we went to the Mastermind. The RGM stuff.
They're great,
We was using them. I mean, they're built like tanks. They've always worked, and they're so customizable as well. Like, you can have them do anything, so... They're probably like the best controllers out
there. I know it was a headache for the crew, and it sounded like you guys were the only ones that were enjoying it, but is there anything you miss about the amps and the cabs?
Do you know when you have them on stage and you feel, well, what was it? Like the air move.
You know what I mean?
People say that. But now, we have a side fill next to me, which is just subs, and I just have basically like sub coming at me, so it still feels like
it's just like something. Kick and rumble,
yeah, just so it's just that. Rumble, so like if you listen to it without your in-ears and it's terrible, but it basically fills all that like fakeness back, do you know, like I would have from a cab, like I just have it cranked next to me so it fills like all that bottom ending to try and get that same feeling back, but I miss using amps, and like I still got all my amps at home, still play them and stuff like that. But this just works really well, so there's like no need to have them.
The thing is, the show's become so much bigger. There's so much going on in the show as well, and like everything's such to a timeline now where everything has to be dialed and perfect. Yeah. So it's just become a necessity of it being perfect every time. Yeah. You know what I mean? No variables, just getting the same. You know, everything's going to trigger at the same time every night, and that's just where the show's become now. You know what I mean? So it's less that. In front of an amp rocking out, you know, it's got more.
Without seeing it myself, I'm sure the production on stage is huge, so it's almost like you guys are in an orchestra pit where it's like everything's timed out, visuals, for sure. So like you need to have the changes be made, and it's just go time.
It's all to time code, so like when the time code triggers all the visuals and the lights, it triggers all our stuff, so it's like, it just works super well for what we do.
It takes time as well, because it's not like, the first bar of the chorus you're going to be on dirty, it's whether you hang on that note a little longer, and it's like that a lot of our time is nudging notes so that you can ring that chord out a little bit more, or come in a little to bring the live element back, so it's not just sterile every night, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a fine art, you know, and it's tweaking and tweaking and tweaking until it gets there, and
that's probably the most annoying part, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
putting the MIDI commands in.
But then every time you go out that night, you test it that night, well, on the chorus of this it probably opened a little sooner, so just over time you slowly start to nudge things and you get it into the swing of the show, you know.
Yeah,
I know that your guys are always kind of, it's a moving target, and you've done the bulk of the work years ago, but Joey, could you maybe explain if there's any kind of tricks or things that you've done that are your EQing or moving order around in the signal flow of the unit? Anything to help Lee feel more like, you know, back to his old rig?
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of set everything up in the Cortex. I mean, show you some pictures and stuff of like, you know, the way we do our signal. It's silly things like the top line we treat as our pedal board. So all of our effects and stomps go on the top line. And then I normally have the third line is like the clean amp. So if you want to do specific reverbs on the clean, the four is only dirty. So it's when you visually look at it, in my head, I'm picturing the old rig, you know what I mean? I'm picturing clean amp, dirty amp, and then we might bring in like some weird synth sounds as like a layer, or like a fuzz tone as a layer and things like that. But again, it's all just how we used to do it back in the day, but just now on a computer screen as opposed to in real life.
I think the last thing I cover is any specific speakers or cabs are you using to kind of emulate the sound?
So I was going to say, so the cab sim we use, what's it called? Yeah, the cab one we use is just like a stock one that's in there. It's like a Zilla.
It's the V30.
Yeah, Zilla.
Stereo V30, Zilla cab, I guess.
But then we run an EQ after that, and I feel like EQ is what makes everything make sense, because I boost a lot of like top mids, and then like it adds in a realness that you kind of don't have when you just have the cab.
It almost brings that air back in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the air, like between the thing that happens between the speaker and a mic.
Yeah.
It brings that in where
it's like just a bit more aggressive and like instant. I can't explain it. It's like harsher, but in a good way for me. Like it's like it makes everything feel more intense and instant again, which is like what an amp, how I have my amp set. Do you know what I mean? So the EQ is like, if we turn the EQ off, the whole sound is like nothing like. It's doing a lot. Do you know what I mean? Like.
But then that EQ will get tweaked per part, per guitar. Yeah, yeah. You know, if we switch guitar, then that EQ is the first thing that will come back to just tweak for that pickup of that guitar. But again, it's for the feeling in the moment. I might think it sounds better, but it might have sounded better before, but it's just if in that moment it makes it play better and you feel better when you play it, like that's what we're going for.
Yeah.
The sound's subjective, like whatever. You know what I mean? It's more like, is it going to feel good in that moment? So then it sounds good.
And some of that stuff you don't know until like, okay, it sounds good in my headphones right now, save it, we're going to go play, and then you guys play it.
Oh, it's always with the context.
And then it's like, oh, in the context of the band, you're like, oh, that's...
Yeah. Even like the room, like we've had it where sound checks will sound good, then the room fills up, we're like, that part didn't quite translate how we thought it would, so then we'll switch it again for the next day, you know. There's always, but then that's part of doing it. Like the fact that we got it in a computer, we can just switch. We're
that's
not,
the
like,
thing, yeah.
Swap heads or anything.
Like I'll just come and change stuff, and then you just press the save button, and it's like, do you know, like on pedals, you have to tweak them and then like, put a dot there or like a sticker
piece
and stuff.
Of tape, yeah.
It just, so like every, I'm guessing nearly every song, like everything's slightly different because it's just set up for that song, but. Well, we don't have to worry about taking photos.
Even back in the day with gates, we used to use the Sentry, the TC Electronics, the noise, which I thought always thought was the best noise gate we ever used. But I used to have two, and I'd change the settings per guitar, per song. Because we'd get to Shadow Moses, and you'd want it super tight.
Yeah.
We'd get to another song, and it's a slightly less hot, so I'd bring it up. But like, just now the fact that every single part, the gate is like tailored for that singular part. And I'm not there in the rack going, oh. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then it gets to the song and I've not switched it and I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? Like,
he's got a lot more free time now.
I just sit here and watch the gig on a screen now, so it's all good.
You can back up in 15 minutes now, can't you?
Sure than that, I'm less than 10, I'm pretty proud of that. Yeah. It's by design, but no, it's all
gentlemen,
good.
Gentlemen, I have taken a lot of your free time, but I thank you, Lee. Oh, yeah.
Cheers,
I thank you, Joey.
Thank
appreciate you.
Pleasure.
You guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for watching. This is Premier Guitar Rig Rundown.